From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 10th day of January, 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at CGB. He's in Mandeville, Louisiana. Matt Bennett from TGM out of Windsor, Illinois, will be here to look at the agricultural cash grain market. We'll talk about the weather forecast with meteorologist Pete Levitt. And along the way today, we'll hear another in our In My Backyard installments from Lisa Braltz, and it all happens during this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It comes to you from Public Radio for the farming world.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Let's check the numbers in Chicago as they finished up on this Thursday afternoon. Futures like this in the soft red winter wheat pit. The March contract at 744.5 was down one for the day. May futures at 753.75 for the soft red, three quarters lower. In July, down a penny at $7.60.5. Those are all closes. And not settlement prices from Kansas City, a settlement for the July hard red winter wheat at $8.19. Down 5.75. Closes in Chicago for the corn pit today, 698.5 at 2 o'clock. 4.25 cents higher on the last trade. May futures at 697.5 up 3.75. And July contract 689.25 up a penny for the day. December futures at $5.83.5. New crop corn, 1.75 cents higher on its last trade. And March futures at $5.93.5 up 1.5 cents. Soy complex now, bean futures $14.15 in the nearby January, down 4.75 on the close. March at 13.83, down 2.5. The last trade for the May up 2.25 at 13.77.5. And July at 13.65.5, down 6.75. November beans, $12.81, down 8 cents. Bean meal futures at 410.30 on a close, down a dollar for the day. Bean oil at 49.30, that's up 6 cents on the afternoon. Live cattle futures in the April contract at $135.07.5. A settlement price there from the CME group up 27.5 cents. June futures a dime higher at $130.37.5. The February feeder cattle at $150.85. And the lead option settled 65 cents lower. The March were down 85 cents at 152.92.5. And lean hogs in the February up 40 cents today at $84.60. April futures at $87 and a dime, down 22.5 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media and comes to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. This is IPM. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil futures, $93.91 a barrel, up 81 cents. RBOB gasoline at 278.8. That's 9.4 cents higher. The ethanol trading at $2.24.7. 0.7 cents, up a penny and 0.7 cents for the day. Natural gas at $3.19.3. That's 8 cents higher. And the heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.05.3, a penny and 0.6 cents lower for the day. Gold futures at $1,678, even, up $22.50. And the U.S. dollar trading 79.74. That's down 0.81 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like. As it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon, occasional showers, a high of 45 degrees on an east-southeast wind at about 16 miles an hour. That one will gust all the way to 22 this afternoon. Chance of precipitation in the area set at 100%. Occasional showers and possibly a thunderstorm this evening. Temperatures rising to around 52, that by 4 a.m. Southeast winds at 14 to 17. Winds could gust as high as 23 as they turn to the southwest after midnight. Chance of precipitation overnight remains 100%. And then tomorrow, mostly cloudy skies and a high near 59 degrees. On a south-southwest wind at about 15 miles an hour, gusting to 21. Mostly cloudy on Friday evening at a low of just 51 degrees. Saturday, cloudy and a high near 53. South-southwest winds at 7 to 14. Winds will turn to the northwest and things will begin to cool down. Rain likely before midnight on Saturday evening. Freezing rain and sleet likely, cloudy, a low of 30 degrees. Chance of precipitation Saturday night set at 70%. And then on Sunday, a 30% chance of snow before noon, mostly cloudy, and a high of just 31 degrees. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Pete Levitt.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I am Todd Gleason on this 10th day of January, the day before USDA reports are due to come out for the very first time. Dan Zwicker of CGP Enterprises at 11 o'clock Central Time during the midst of open outcry and electronic trade. What are you looking forward to?
Well, it will probably have some volatility in it. It'll be initial reactions, especially if the numbers are tilted way outside of the trade range or on the extreme side of the range. We're going to have some volatility in the marketplace. And the only good thing about it, I guess, is we'll get it over with within seconds, since it is going to be done, you know, right in the middle of the trade when the trade volume is usually the largest. But you'll probably have a real quiet period, maybe starting 15 minutes in front of it. Everybody will start back and off, and then it'll be interesting to see how things handle. But I'd say probably within 15 minutes after it comes out, we'll have it all worked in.
This will not actually be the first time that we've had the USDA reports released during trading hours, of course, because electronic trade and even the open outcry trade was opened a bit early during this past
year,
2012. But they were opening the opening outcry period, so it'll be interesting because volume is usually much higher at this time of the day. Any advice from you to producers about what they should not do in terms of taking a position or not taking a position in this?
Yes, I suppose any kind of covered positions using options, the volatility is quite already pumped up. So my guess is that I would lean more toward probably being a surprise to the upside. I think a lot of the bearishness is already worked into the market, so it's kind of hard for me to see anything super bearish. A larger soybean production, I know a lot of people are expecting something like that, but that's going to be used up on the demand side anyway, so I don't think you would see major changes in carry out. So I don't see this being a super shocker. There's definitely opportunities to be different, you know, because they have the December 1 stocks report. And then when you complicate it with last year's drought and early harvest, we don't know if some of the 12 bushels got counted into the 11 crop year. And, you know, so there is going to be some uncertainty, and I don't think the trade has a lot of confidence, at least last reports anyway. And it's a difficult job. I'm glad I'm not part of the team that tries to figure out these numbers, because it is going to be difficult. And I think, you know, I've said this for a long time, is that I think the USDA sets themselves up for criticism because they come out with specific numbers. They should come out with ranges, because they are estimates in many ways, and if they had the ranges, even though the trade would go to the mid-range, you would still have a published range. And if you're bearish, you would trade one side of the range, and if you're bullish, you'd trade the other side of the range. So I think it could be simpler for the USDA to come out with ranges rather than specific numbers and let the trade get all bent out of shape over 100 million bushels, which is basically is in the margin of error.
Right. There's 100 million bushels in the margin of error. Eventually, that 100 million bushels, whichever way it shows up, will be at the ending stocks number. And I suppose all eyeballs might float there at some point. What do you think will happen with the ending stocks number, in particular for corn this time around?
Well, if they find bushels, I'm not too sure the ending stocks number would go up any, because they need to put some bushels into feed usage. Now, exports, the way they're going, it looks like exports are going to fall underneath a billion bushels. And I think USDA has the current projection at 1.5 or 11.50, I think, and some people think it could fall back as far as 9.50. So there could be 200 million bushels be taken out of the export market and put into feed usage. The ethanol grind's probably pretty solid. I don't see them wanting to change that very much. So if they lose bushels, they can, you know, take it out of exports and kind of keep carry out. The same. If they find bushels, then we could maybe see the numbers go up if USDA wants to take on the export deal, because there's just no way, at least at current pace, that we're going to export 1150 on the corn at this time.
Last week when I talked to you, you were feeling pretty bearish. Have you changed at all this week?
I like corn action. Corn is on target. We had a little reversal up, a daily reversal up on Monday. That's extended itself now, and without a bearish curveball, we could have a weekly reversal up, and then that could extend itself into a monthly reversal up. So I do like the action of corn, at least for maybe a winter popping here. And soybeans, everything on soybeans is also in a position to try to put together some kind of winter rally. But tomorrow morning is going to have a lot to say about that.
Yeah, it's difficult the day before a big event like this one to really talk about the marketplace. Let's go back out to the 2013 crop harvest for new crop corn and soybeans. Producers at some point will have to make some decisions about what they're going to be planting. It appears the ratio has gotten more in line at this time. Is it a better feeling to you as to maybe a little less than 100 million acres of corn?
Well, yeah, weather is going to have a lot to do with it. But, yes, the soybean market is definitely moving in the direction to try to bring in more bean acres at the expense of corn. We'll have to, it's not real fluffy yet, but it, you know, if it gives people the comfort level or the reason to actually, I think there's farmers out there, especially in our listening audience, that's been on corn a little bit too long and know that they need to bring soybeans back into the mix. That would at least, I think, bring those acres, into soybeans rather than another round of corn. But, we'll have to see what happens at the end of the day with the South American crop. A year ago at this time, everybody was bared up on the South American crop, and basically it started shrinking and just kept on shrinking through the rest of the year. So we'll have to see what happens there. The dollar was sharply lower here this morning. I think, you know, that outside influence still could come in here and impact commodities, because it's quite obvious politicians of all colors and all stripes and all nationalities, at the end of the day, they print money. And we're seeing currency devaluation throughout the world. So as politicians devalue the currency, it's just going to take more of it to buy a bushel of corn or a barrel of oil.
You mentioned a couple of fundamentals. The Brazilian and Argentine or South American crop is looking much better than it did early on when they thought it was awfully wet and wasn't going to be planted, and now there's some ideas that one's all right. Turn your attention, though, to wheat. There's some awful cold and frigid temperatures actually across much of China. Are you concerned at all with the winter wheat crop in the northern hemisphere in general? Dry in the United States, cold in China, dry in the Ukraine.
Well, I think those are all factors that everybody's watching very carefully in the wheat market. And any kind of evidence that would come out that we have done some damage I think that would light the fire of the wheat market. There's no doubt about that. Especially here in the U.S., the hard red winter wheat area is still super dry. The weather pattern seems to be, you know, the southeastern United States seem to be getting all the rain, Ohio River Valley and south. Like I told Dave this morning, there's enough water down here. I could have drove my jet ski to work today. It's still raining. I don't know how many inches of rain we've had, but all of the ditches and the canals are all full and whatnot. But that seems to be the pattern, at least for right now. So I do think the hard red or wheat area, western Corn Belt, that still could become an issue as we go forward. But we first got to get the final crop report out of the way, and then within 2 weeks, everybody will start talking about 2013.
Well, you may be flooded with water there, but we've had just 0.06 of an inch on campus today. So,
well, I wish you guys could take some of this rain. We got plenty of it.
All right. Hey, talk to you next week.
That's Dan
Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon to take a look at the agricultural futures markets.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
Hi, this is Todd Gleason. Hey, join me January 25th for our Voices of Illinois Agriculture event. We'll share a little Illinois wine, eat some great Grand Championship pork, hear stories from Paul Cooley, do a little Ag Outlook with Wayne Nelson, Jackie Bakes, Steve Freed, and Gary Schnitke, and best of all, dine with Orion Samuelson. Your $100 ticket buys the meal, the show, and a signed copy of the Big O's new book. Even better, the funds raised will support the College of ACES Agricultural Communications and Hospitality Management programs. Register today at willag.org or call 217-333-9355.
Support comes from the Black Dog.
Listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Up next, Lisa Braltz is here with her latest edition of In My Backyard this week, Slow Money, Risk, and Local Food Enterprises.
Winter is a season when food communities everywhere hold their annual conferences, both to assess the season just finished and the one looming on the horizon. So I know it wasn't exactly in my backyard, but I attended the OFA conference. OFA is the Ohio Ecological Food and Farm Association, in February, because the keynote speaker was Woody Tash, founder of Slow Money and author of the book Inquiries into the Nature of Slow Money, Investing as if Food, Farms, and Fertility Mattered. Not familiar with slow money? We've heard the adjective slow applied here and there over the years. Slow food springs immediately to my mind anyway, as a response to our fast and getting faster culture, and slow money is no different. The basic idea is to move at least some of the money we invest in places far away, in businesses we'll never see, back into our own communities, and especially into small local food enterprise. A lot of slow money is about finance, but money affects our social and physical environments, which is something all of us understand. Woody Tash isn't what I expected. He's not a farmer with a story. He's not a food writer telling us a story. And he's not an academic telling us why stories matter. He's a finance guy, albeit a finance guy who was interested in seeing money fund socially and environmentally aware projects. But his current chosen work, after 3 decades kicking around venture capital, philanthropy, and social investing, is to convince people to move some of their money out of what we currently call traditional investment and into small local food enterprise. He sums it up thusly.
In the aggregate, we talk about getting 1 million Americans to invest 1% of their money in local food systems within a decade. That doesn't mean they're all going to do it through slow money, but that's an aspirational goal that we want to get a lot of people doing a little bit near where they live.
Slow Money is a national organization dedicated to getting this across. And currently in the United States, there are 13 chapters that have emerged in 18 or so months since the national organization was formed. These 13 chapters have invested, with Slow Money's help, $14 million in 95 local food projects, farms, equipment, local food distribution, businesses, and other endeavors. Tash estimates that 10 more chapters will start working with the organization in 2012 to funnel more money into similar projects. That's a lot of money, and some of the funded food projects are large. But what about people who don't have a lot of money to invest, say someone like me, but still wanted to invest in some sort of local food enterprise, something a little smaller? Is that still slow money?
If you were getting together with your neighbors and you really did find someone who wanted to start a little composting thing and they needed $500 for their first load of something or other, you would probably find a way to chip in and do it with them. The point is you got to have the jargon is social capital, but it's really just community relationships and trust. We were talking about trust this morning, where people are committed to finding some things to do, however big or small, to me, doesn't matter.
The biggest question at the conference, however, was about financial risk. One woman, a banker, stood up during a question and answer session during the conference and told Tash she thought what he was proposing, moving money out of these traditional investments and into something new, was irresponsible.
I say, is it really riskier to invest in a farm down the street when you know the farmer, you know where the farm is, you know who the markets are for the farm's produce? Maybe the farmer needs a tractor. Maybe he wants to expand his marketing a little bit. Maybe he needs some other equipment. Yes, that is risky, but life is risky. You know, I'd rather take some of my money out of those big global risks and bring the risks closer to home and things that I understand more.
He was having dinner with her later that night. I should probably find out how that went. Remember, slow and steady wins the race. This is Lisa Braltz for In My Backyard.
Our thanks go to Lisa Braltz and Dave Dickey for their In My Backyard segments.
Support comes from the Black Dog Smoke and Ale House, serving barbecue beef brisket, pork shoulder, ribs, chicken, and more. Slow cooked over a wood-fired smoker. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. The Black Dog, 201 North Broadway in downtown Urbana.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. Let's check the cash grain markets. On the phone line from TGM in Windsor, Illinois, is Matt Bennett. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Is it quiet on this day before the 11 o'clock release, central time, that is, of USDA reports?
Yeah, just a little quiet around. Not a whole lot going on here, and kind of a wait-and-see approach. You know, everyone's trying to figure out where we're going to go tomorrow. It's a pretty tough call.
It's been a disquieting few weeks in the agricultural markets. Producers have watched as their commodities have fallen in price. Will things change tomorrow, you think?
Yeah, I mean, I have a feeling that, especially with the corn situation, I just have to feel that we'll have a little bit of a bullish report. I know a lot of people are kind of expecting it, but from a stock situation, I certainly think that as far as harvested acreage goes, it needs to come down, and feed usage definitely needs to be adjusted, in my opinion. And so when it's all said and done, I look for us to come out with a fairly bullish little corn report. And on beans, I'm probably a little more neutral, maybe on the other side of it a little bit.
You would be in an area where there's a dearth of corn, I think, or not very much of it around. Is that truly the case?
Yeah, there's not a lot of corn around, you know, and then I hear some people, you know, are looking for corn, depending on which processor it is. And, you know, bottom line is there's, you get in our area and there's not a bin with corn in it anywhere, you know, as far as on the farm. And so there's really not a whole lot of it. And we've talked about this before as far as, you know, the really high-quality corn. You know, I don't know that there's a lot of that out there. We've been getting along pretty good shipping while we've been shipping, unfortunately. But, you know, I've heard a lot of horror stories with other people.
And your bids for the day?
Yeah, we'd be looking cash corn back up over $7 at $7.01, and then fall would be $5.58, $13.88 on cash beans, and $12.50 for fall.
Thanks so much, man.
Yeah, thank you, Todd.
Mm-hmm. Matt Bennett is with TGM. He's out of Windsor, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Well, I'll be back in just a couple minutes. We'll talk with meteorologist Peter Levitt about the agricultural weather forecast. You can always listen to us again anytime you'd like on our website. The address there is willag.org.
It's National Bittersweet Chocolate Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1839, Indian tea became available in Britain for the first time. Up until this date, only tea from China was available, and that was very expensive. The development and import of Indian tea brought the price down so all could afford it, and it quickly became the national drink in Britain. In 1922, Thomas Edison was issued a patent for a storage battery electrode and production of the same. In 1969, the final issue of the Saturday Evening Post appeared after 147 years of publication. It returned in limited publication years later. Over the years, the magazine featured a number of covers dealing with agriculture, including The Boys and Pests in 1932, The Victory Garden in 1943, and Home Gardens in 1951. In 1984, Wendy's Where's the Beef ad campaign began. And in 2004, Norman Heatley died. An American doctor, he solved the problem of extracting penicillin from its mold, paving the way for its mass production. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. On the phone line is agricultural meteorologist Pete Levitt. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
When I made my way across campus this afternoon, I was a little wet, and it looks like we're going to stay that way in our part of the world. Tell me about it, please.
Yes, you are. There's a disturbance coming along from the southern plains and the southeastern portions of the plains. It's going to be pushing moisture up the Mississippi Valley and into the lower Ohio Valley the next day or two. And indeed, it'll be wet. There's showers now covering just about all of the southern half of Illinois, and the northern half of the state is cloudy, waiting for some of those showers to arrive up there, and that will get in there tonight and early tomorrow. And tomorrow looks like a wet day, after which we get a brief period of dryness on Saturday, and Sunday we're back wet again. And then, finally, we can look for clearing weather as we move into next week. So we have clearing weather with cooler temperatures. Temperatures, by the way, are going to be well above normal over the next 2 or 3 days, averaging 20 to 25 degrees above normal for this time of year. So we're not looking for anything in the way of snow. Most of the precipitation will be as rain, and that's mostly going to be regarded as beneficial for the crops, even though it's the western Corn Belt that's still in drought condition. The eastern Corn Belt could use some more moisture as well. So from about the Mississippi Valley on eastward, we're going to see some reprieve from the dry conditions we've seen so much of this past summer and autumn. And then we're going to see the cooler weather return the latter part of next week. Precipitation will decline again. Meanwhile, we can't go for anything significant in the western Corn Belt, and drought lingers on, and we keep repeating it, but it's the facts that things are much too dry when you look at the western and central portions of the Midwestern and Southern Plains, Great Plains Corn and Wheat Belt. So it's still a very, frostful situation. We're not getting the rain that we need at this time of year.
And go one other place across the planet for me. I think South America is doing fine, but China has been really cold, and they have a winter wheat crop that could be in trouble.
Yes, China has been cold, and they've been dry, which just aggravates the importance of the cold. Because the crop isn't protected, this China winter wheat area. They're going to remain that way in east central China. They're going to be on the cold side, and it's going to continue to be relatively dry there, and that's going to put stress on winter crops.
Thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time.
Okay, my pleasure.
That's agricultural meteorologist Pete Levitt, and wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report for Thursday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.